Okay, we're live. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On today's show, I have a very special guest, a returning guest. Her name is Charlotte Dennett. We spoke last month about a book she just published in February 2022. Title of that book is Follow the Pipelines, Uncovering the Mystery of a Lost Spy and the Deadly Politics of the Great Game for Oil. But today we're going to talk about a book, very long book, over 1,000 pages. I got about a third to the half of the way through it. So we're going to probably break this up into two discussions. Title of the book is Thy Will Be Done, The Conquest of the Amazon, Nelson Rockefeller, and Evangelism in the Age of Oil. And she co-wrote it with her husband, Gerard Colby, who unfortunately couldn't be here. There's a newer version that just came out, but it was originally published in 1995. And there's also an audiobook. It has excellent reviews. And she uses this kind of older term for native populations, Indian, throughout the book. And I think that was the nomenclature of the time of Nelson Rockefeller. So I think the more common parlance is, acceptable parlance, is Native American or indigenous. And so they talk a lot about indigenous. But I think at that time, they still had that older kind of colonial term for the natives, Indian. And so so this is a very detailed book. I enjoyed reading what I did read. But Charlotte, welcome back to the show, and I appreciate your time.
Yeah, sure thing. Glad to be with you.
So I've for people
your
who
other
didn't
interviews.
Good. So thank you.
At least
so
you for tried people to read who the book.
I tried. I mean, I tried to get through. I was very over ambitious as usual, but from what I read, you take your time going through the very background of Nelson Rockefeller from the very pre-war beginning. Can you kind of talk about your research and how you got started with this project?
Sure. Let's see. We started on this in the mid-70s. I had just met Jerry. I was like a refugee from the Lebanese Civil War, and I decided to go to New York and stay there for a while to wait out the war, which ended up 15 years. So meanwhile, I did some stuff on the UN beat, and I met Jerry, who was also a freelance journalist. And he had just had an interview with two interesting journalists. One of them was, one of them was from Spain. I think they were both from Spain, if I recall. Anyway, they had been in the Amazon on sort of a trip with their partners, a fun trip. And one day, while they were on the Amazon River, this plane came out from nowhere. And it was just a little prop plane. And it landed on some grassy area in the Amazon, and out stepped this guy that looked like an American with a suit on. And so the journalists were totally surprised by this, and they said, "What are you doing here?" And so did the man in the suit say, "What are you doing here?" Well, as it turns out, this man was with the Summer Institute of Linguistics, which is a very sophisticated missionary organization. Its home title is the Wycliffe Bible Translators. But for purposes of penetrating Latin America, they used the secular name. And they actually were teaching these, we found out, teaching indigenous people how to read and write in their own native language. And then that would make it easier for them to learn Spanish or Portuguese, as it turned out. So, but they were under a lot of suspicion. So that's how our story began, because the indigenous people at the time were suffering from genocidal attacks on them. In the mid-1960s to the mid-1970s, about 100,000 indigenous tribes had been killed, 100,000 people had been killed. And there was a lot of speculation that this missionary organization had some connection with the CIA, because they had advanced radio communications equipment. They had a team of airplanes, short takeoff and landing airplanes, the type that had been used in Vietnam. And the missionaries were able to penetrate far into the Amazon where even the nationals couldn't go. So that made the nationals, and I mean both planners, economists, and also anthropologists, had them very concerned, and they really suspected that they were supported by the CIA. So if you connect genocide, CIA, then it behooved us as American journalists to look further into this. Was this really true? And what was really going on in the Amazon? So Jerry had broached the idea to me.
Hey, Charlotte, sorry to interrupt, but let's turn off the video. It'll help with the connection. So I'm going to stop my cam. Can you hit stop cam on the bottom of your StreamYard website? There should be a stop cam button. She's still there. Charlotte, can you hear me?
I think.
Okay. Can you Charlotte, hear me can now? You stop the cam? Yeah, yeah, I can. Can you stop cam?
Yeah.
Hit the stop cam button on the bottom. It'll help with the connection. How do you just take your mouse and go to the bottom. It says mute, stop cam. Says,
there, I got there it. You go. Perfect. I got it.
Perfect. Okay.
Oh, so I just heard that you, whole spiel.
Yeah. So I lost you at, it behooved you to, as American journalists to look into this whole story about
the planes good. And the suit. Okay. Yeah. All right. So that's how it started. And I said, I did say that we went down there with the two other journalists, and then they backed out and we continued. So we did a huge trip. It started in Mexico, and we continued on. We went to Ecuador, Peru, Brazil, and Colombia, all of which have portions of their territory in the Amazon. And to make a long story short, I mean, we were down there for a year, practically. And then we figured out that we didn't really know who was funding the missionaries. And so then we came back and did a trip through the South, because the missionaries were claiming they were just funded by their local churches. And finally, we had a tip from our literary agent that an individual who had been a former ambassador to Brazil, his papers had been declassified in the FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt Library in Hyde Park. And because our literary agent was saying, look, you got to show who's really behind it, what powerful Americans might have been involved. So we got into the papers of Adolf Burley, this former ambassador, who we discovered while getting through the papers is he was very close to Nelson Rockefeller. And the more we looked into his paper, we suddenly discovered that Nelson Rockefeller, who is best known as being the governor of New York, and probably even better known for how he died in the arms of his mistress, he was building this empire in Latin America, and it began when he was appointed by FDR to be the coordinator of inter-American affairs. And so then we got into those papers and discovered that Nelson Rockefeller had a quote-unquote shining dream for the development of the Amazon. Now, his being an oil czar, you can be sure that he was interested in exploring for oil in the Amazon. And there was oil in the Amazon, but also other resources, you know, setting up agribusiness and giant ranches. So anyway, the plunder of the Amazon began after World War II, but there was some resistance. In 1945, the president of Brazil, Vargas, was trying to put conditions on American investment in the Amazon, and he was overthrown in a coup. And then in 1964, President Goulart, who was also trying to be protective of the Amazon, he too was overthrown in a coup, and we were able to ultimately find out that one of the main people responsible was Colonel J.C. King, who was charge of clandestine operations in the Western Hemisphere. He was one of the main principals involved in that. So then we were able to link all these development programs to what the missionaries were doing. And what it really boils down to is they wanted to invest, and that means invade, frankly, but invest in the Amazon. And they were concerned that there would be resistance from indigenous people, namely bow and arrows, just like the concerns over the conquests of the West. And what we learned is that some of the same tried and true tactics had been used, namely, if pacifying the Indians through missionaries, and I can get into that more, if that didn't work, if indigenous tribes were still resisting, they would have to resort to more serious military methods. They would send in paramilitary troops, and it ranged from leaving arsenic in laced arsenic candy on the river basin, smallpox laced in blankets. They wanted to kill the Indians so there would be no resistance. So this is a very, very tragic story. A lot of it mimics the same techniques that were used in the conquest of the West. And we took years in documenting it, but in the process, we uncovered this huge empire built by one of the richest oil families in the world. And as I often love to say, once you climb to the top of the mountain, you look down and the view is spectacular. And what we found out is all these different groups, they could be government groups, they could be the Peace Corps, they could be anthropologists or missionaries. One way or the other, they were all being used by the very powerful in order to extract not only information, which is critical, but also the resources of the people down there. And it's happening again, all over again. Right. We had wanted our book to make a difference, but at any rate, yes.
And your book was kind of, I mean, would you say suppressed or kind of ignored? Would you agree with that?
Our book? It was published by HarperCollins. And we had a wonderful editor, Hugh Van Dusen. He was extremely supportive of our book. He said it was the best book he'd ever been the editor of, but he was sort of on his way out at the time. He was retiring, and we went through the hardcover, and then to put out a paperback, we had to get Hugh Van Dusen to say, look, get me 5,000 copies ordered, and it'll come out in paperback. So we got some funding for that, but then the funding ran out. And I remember calling into HarperCollins at one point to find out what was happening to them, because the book was suddenly listed as out of stock indefinitely. And I called HarperCollins. I said, what's going on here? And they said, no, I think I posed as a reader. I wanted to get a copy of the book. And the answer was, this book will never be reprinted, and wow, and was hung up on. And that's what happened. So the book, although it had great reviews, was suppressed. And that seems to be the story of our lives. You know, you want to write the truth? Well, good luck, because you're only going to get so far. Jerry had also written a mammoth book on the DuPont family, and that book had been suppressed by the DuPonts, namely published, but then later killed. There's even a word for it. And that's privishing. I found this out by going around to different publishing houses and saying and asking, what happened to your books that expose corporations or government coups or so on? I finally found an editor who told me it's well known in the industry. It's called privishing, to privately publish a book so it sinks without a trace. And what that means is they'll go through the motions. They'll print the book, but then they won't promote it. They'll cut all of the support mechanisms, the promotion, the second paperback edition, the author's tours, all cut. So the book dies.
Right. It's so like a form of control, right, Charlotte? It's a form totally. Of, instead of making you go to another publisher, they take it in and then suppress it.
And then, they kill the book. And so what happened then is our book got rescued by an online publisher called Open Road Media. And thanks to a NYU professor called Mark Crispin Miller, who was a fan of our book, he was able to get it republished as an ebook. And we updated. That was in 2017. And it's part of a series called The Forbidden Bookshelf. And if you Google that, you will find a whole bunch of books that have been suppressed. And there you go.
And you can see it right there. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see at the bottom of the picture of Thy Will Be Done. This is the newer version of the cover.
Yes.
It says Forbidden Bookshelf, series edited by Mark Crispin.
Exactly.
Miller. He invited me to come out to New York to discuss one of my other books too. So I have a bit of a connection to him.
Oh, but that's great.
Yeah, he does great work.
Yeah.
So you had this say that word again, publishize. What was it?
No, it's called privishing.
Privishing, thank you.
Private P-R-Y-V-I-S-H. Privish I-N-G.
Never heard that word before.
Yeah, well, all authors should be attuned to it because it's still going on.
Well, that's kind of one of the reasons why I self-published all my books, that people think it's like an option to, you know, it's the publishing houses are the ideal place to publish your books. But in my case, I felt like I would lose control. So I really went a different route because I'd heard of other stories of like non-promotion or changes or mandating certain stuff. So people really do have to watch out there. But you've done tons of research. I mean, this is really a masterwork. It's 1,000 pages of footnoted material on really one of the sons of probably one of the richest families. At a certain point, was the richest family in the world at one time. He's the grandson of John Rockefeller,
the founder. First, right? The founder. Yeah. So he was one of the four brothers that actually were the son of John D. Rockefeller Jr. Yeah. And it was totally absorbing, very fascinating. It took us forever. I mean, we finally finished it after 18 years of research and writing, of which Jerry was the main author. But I helped a great deal, mostly in the research and the editing. And then by doing this, of course, I discovered how to look at the world from their vantage point at a very high level. And our book, Thy Will Be Done, has been called A Methodology of Conquest. Once you understand how conquest happens in Latin America, I learned, you can apply that to other parts of the world. And since I had been a journalist in the Middle East, I applied my lessons to the Middle East. One of the big lessons was maps. Thy Will Be Done is full of maps. And they show the coordinates for, like, for instance, where the missionaries are located and where the big resources are, because these powerful people are counting on the missionaries to pacify the indigenous people. And they do it through the Bible and through religion. It's very sophisticated. And when we did our update, to our dismay, we found out that the Summer Institute of Linguistics is now all over the world. It's very heavily involved in Africa, not so much the Middle East, because Muslims do not convert easily, but throughout much of the world, this missionary organization is doing the pacification work required so that big corporate entities can move in on their lands.
Right. And can you explain, I mean, you go back into very early, this one character, his name is William Cameron Townsend, and some of these missions, can you talk about their earlier ideas, fundamentalism versus maybe the Rockefeller outlook that really was the outlook that drove them for decades? Can you talk about that?
Well, William Cameron Townsend, the founder of the Wycliffe Bible Translators, alias Summer Institute of Linguistics, was a Bible salesman in Guatemala as a young man. And that's how he got to know indigenous people, their cultures, to a certain degree. But
for nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com. For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
He wanted to build his organization, and he realized that in order to penetrate Latin America, he would have to minimize the Protestant connection and the proselytizing connection, because Latin America is mostly Catholic. And he knew that if he was ever going to reach 2,000 tongues, that was their motto, 2,000 tongues to go. And that was like, if we can reach indigenous people who have 2,000 languages, in fact, there have been many more that have been discovered, then we will bring them to Christ, and they'll be better for it. And of course, corporate America will be better for it, but that would not be advertised. And so he developed this, and he relied on linguists. One of them was out of the Rockefeller Network. And so he learned a very scientific way of doing this, which was go into the tribes, get to know their language, use linguists to do it. And that way you'll be doing a good deed. Namely, you'll teach them literacy. And now, why was this able to go over with governments in Latin America? The reason was they all wanted to develop the interior, and they knew they didn't have the mechanism to do it. And so by relying on the missionaries, that seemed to do the trick. Namely, they come in, they do their nice work in developing native language through the use of linguistics. But how they did it is that they translated the New Testament. So there was an underlying proselytizing aim in this mission. But the leaders of the governments, respective governments, were willing to turn a blind eye to that. And by the way, many of these governments were beholden to Nelson Rockefeller, because he had gone down there during World War II, and he had met all sorts of people, mostly military and government officials. And so this was just one aspect of conquest. Nelson Rockefeller was very influential in developing propaganda tools during World War II that was aimed at the Germans and getting them out. And he was successful. So anyway, we've got all these maps showing and charts showing the Rockefeller influence, which is just huge. And I would maintain, still has not been sufficiently explored. But at any rate.
But I think it's important because a lot of people wouldn't even know about Nelson's influence in that area and how tied he was to it. He had investments all over the place. He had investments in Venezuela, Colombia, interest in many different places.
And Brazil.
Right.
Yeah.
And you show, and your maps are very important. They show what people thought of Brazil. It was the size of the U.S., untapped resources, oil. So they were, you know, looking at it to make a lot of money out of that, if possible. But it also is interesting because where they're looking at it from economic perspective, people like Townsend are looking at it for spiritual, and they have a map. And Townsend is an internationalist. Would you agree with that? I mean, he's trying to evangelize all over the world, Philippines, Guatemala, Mexico, Peru. And he knows all those, whatever the current leader of those nations were, right? Or
Yes. I mean, you know, they have a base in North Carolina, and all it shows is, you know, the wonderful William Cameron Townsend, what he did for the organization and how he advanced missionary endeavors, and the emphasis was never on conquest. That was always hidden. It was more like, this is what we've done. We've saved the souls of so many indigenous people. The missionaries themselves, you know, the ones that are in the field, a lot of them are well-meaning people, and they are ignorant, or at least they were in the time we went down there, because we stayed at some of their bases. But the boys on top, the top leaders, they know damn well what's going on. William Cameron Townsend had to cut deals with very powerful people to get his way. And they, of course, were very happy to do it because his organization was useful to them.
Right.
There's a terrific map. Well, I'm bragging, but there's this one map that I can't get over. It's on page, let's see, 503. And it's
which
a map.
Chapter is it?
Yeah. Which chapter is it? Chapter 32, Poisons of the Amazon, chapter 32.
Okay.
And there's a picture there. It's the map of Brazil, which shows you how huge it is. And it's got shaded areas that show hostile tribes. SIL, this is one thing SIL did. It did a whole survey of hostile tribes in Brazil. Now, who do you think that was serving? Anyway.
Let me see if I can pull that up. I'm going to put it up on the screen right now.
Oh, that'd be great.
Here you go. There it is. It's up.
Okay. Oh, beautiful. There it is. Yep. Well, good for you. Well, anyway, and then you see the key there. All those shaded areas are investments by corporations, and we name them. A lot of them are Brazilian named corporations, but they will have heavy investment by Rockefeller interests. There's Hannah Steel, for instance, that's heavily involved, U.S. Steel, Kaiser Aluminum, DK Ludwig was looking after bauxite. But then there's also the interest in oil. There's, let's see, what is there here? There's a cattle ranch. The oil companies in this particular map are not so identified, but it was known there was a lot of oil in there. That was Nelson's shining dream. And then what you see is oil shale. Yeah, we do notice oil shale. That's in the southern part. You can see right down in the southern right-hand corner. Wait a minute, I got to turn this off.
Close to Sao Paulo, yeah.
Yeah. I can't answer this now, so I'm going to have to just say no. So they did this report, hostile tribes. So here are the missionaries identifying who's hostile, who's not, who's amenable to being pacified, and so on. And this happened. They did this survey and published in 1966. This is right after the coup. in 1964 that overthrew President. Oh Lord, I'm sorry.
And these, it's okay. And these coups were specific. There were definite policy changes after each one of these coups.
Yeah,
the 45 coup and the 64 coup.
Right? After 64, somebody's really trying. Let me just. Hello. Yeah, but I can't talk now. Can you call me back in an hour? I'm in an interview. Thank you. Whew. All right. Yeah, what were you saying?
I was just saying that these it's specifically Brazil, we're not talking about other countries, but yeah. These were sophisticated overthrows with new policies once these people were overthrown, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, you see it over and over again, but in the case of Brazil, it's clearly, there's no question that the CIA was involved in overthrowing the President Goulart of Brazil. And what happened? Right afterwards, there goes Summer Institute of Linguistics showing maps and hostile tribes, and then the big corporations start moving in. Right. I say here...
And there's one interesting thing. When Vargas died, he made a statement that he killed himself after he realized he was on the outs, but he said something pretty profound to his countrymen. I've been fighting against international forces this whole time. I wish you well. You know, it's very profound statement. Maybe I can find it on here. But,
yeah. Well, that is true. And the Brazilians know it. It's just that, you know, right now you got Bolsonaro, and he is just setting back everything that was accomplished, namely protection. Whole areas, protection of indigenous areas, and he's just marauding the Amazon as we speak. And of course, they're very, very brave people. The greatest brave people are the indigenous environmentalists who are fighting back to this day, but many of their leaders have been killed. And that was one thing that really impressed us when we were down there. We were sort of down there in the age of the dictators, and we were very careful. For instance, we did not announce our presence to the American embassy because we figured we'd be tracked and followed if we did that. So we went in as tourists, and then we went to all these different countries and found very similar stories, very, very tragic stories. So, as I said, our hope was that we were going to have a major UN session on genocide of indigenous people, and it never happened. So, too bad. And it still hasn't happened. And right now, by the way, this is a timely interview because right now you're having the Summit of the Americas in the U.S. first time. And it's already becoming controversial because the countries that would be viewed as more left than centrist, well, certainly Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, they have been disinvited. They're not invited. And so as a result of that, Mexico's president, Obrador, said he's not coming. He's boycotting it. So there's this push on their part to say enough of this control, talk about control over Latin America. Everyone should be invited. We should all be talking together about the future of Latin America. So it started as a controversy already, and it started as a controversy for the Biden administration, which was sort of highlighting the summits, promising more economic development, more work on immigration and COVID, of course. So, and climate, that, you know, there was going to be an effort to present a nice neoliberal solution to the problems in Latin America. A lot of Latin Americans see right through it. You know, they're not dumb. And again, one thing that struck Jerry and me, as I was saying, we were there in the age of the dictators, was how thankful we were that we did not have to worry as American citizens at home about being hunted down and assassinated, because there were just so many people in Latin America that were resisting this intrusion. whether it was indigenous or it could be, you know, professors. There was a wonderful movement of universities that tried to stop the this development, so to speak, invasion of the Amazon, and they were successful up to a point. But it just seems like the resistance can only go so far, and then governments are overthrown, and elections are manipulated, and so it's right now there was a period in when more progressive forces were able to survive, and still there are efforts to stymie them, and David Rockefeller had formed an organization called the Council for Americas. And we read into their reports and saw that they were trying to prevent this happening. The one thing they do not want is nationalization of industries. Right. Yeah.
And that's happened a few times. Mexico with Pemex, and then in Brasilia, it was, what was the name of the oil company? Petrobras. Right. So there's always been these conflicts between nationalization of oil and somebody from the outside running it. It's really incredible. Same with Venezuela.
Yeah.
Actually.
Exactly. And now, Biden's people are going hat in hand to Venezuela. You know, they shunned Venezuela. They sanctioned it. And I kid you not, their Rockefeller forces, even though the two brothers are dead, they're very active on doing that. That's what we learned. They wanted to prevent this from happening. So, but here's Biden going hat in hand to Venezuela because it's a major oil producer. And, you know, he's trying to lower the price of gas. So he's going everywhere he can to get them to pump out more oil, hoping that that this will help. But in the short term, I don't think it will. And I'm not sure Venezuela has cooperated. I don't think it has. He's also going to be going to Saudi Arabia soon for the same reason.
I think he already had. I think he may be flying personally, but I think somebody from the administration already.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
And he asked the Saudi Arabians for help, and they.
Oh no, I think Biden's going.
Okay, well.
Last I saw, I mean, there's been the groundwork, right? But the problem there is, of course, that Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, was responsible for killing Khashoggi, a Saudi national who became a reporter for Washington Post. And for the longest time, Saudi Arabia was treated as a pariah. And that's what Biden wanted to do. But now he's got this war in Ukraine and all these problems, you know, inflation and the price of gas and so on. So he's going hat in hand to Saudi Arabia. That's what I understand, unless it's change.
No, I believe it. I mean, yeah, and there's a lot. I mean, there's Rockefeller. He really had this kind of following in his grandfather's footstep of, I'm going to just try to control everything, anything that I can get my hands on. It's really my attempt, my goal, right? And fairly young, he was in the government of Roosevelt for a little bit too, right? And then came back.
That's how he got his entree into Latin America, by being the coordinator of inter-American affairs, which he built up a very sophisticated team in the different fields, you know, economics, health, banking. David Rockefeller was hugely relevant in that, and military, and so he was able to bring some top military and government people under his wing. And this is an interesting story. When Lula, who wanted to be president of Brazil, this was what, a couple of decades ago, was in New York. He had to go down to Wall Street to get checked out by Wall Street as to whether they would support him. And he turned out to be more radical than they wanted. He's going to come back. His election is coming up soon. They tried to erase him basically through charges of corruption, but he's back and he has a lot of popular support. I see a comment by a person, a listener, saying, "This is interesting. You don't hear about this much." Yeah, right. Well, why not? I mean, let's consider why you aren't hearing about it. I mean, oil, the subject of oil, I learned, is heavily censored, first of all. Wow. And the reason is it's the main fuel of the military. So that's a reason you don't hear about it. But also you don't hear about the boys on top, which some people have dared to call the ruling class. And the Rockefellers are at the top of the heap, I would say. They are the neoliberal forces that through a whole century of trial and error have learned to rule, you know, as the top most wealthiest and powerful oil family during the 20th century. They learned through trial and error. And one of the things they learned is that it's better to control through indirect rule, it's called, instead of the old colonial direct rule that the Europeans had used, you know, outright military control. Their way of control is more subtle nowadays, and it's mostly through economics. You know, if you can starve a country through economics but not invade militarily, then you're doing well. But you know, sometimes it backfires. And anyway, you know, the disastrous wars in Afghanistan and Iraq are two examples of how it ultimately backfires. The people become savvy. And they don't appreciate our presence, quite frankly. And I wrote about that in my book, Follow the Pipelines, but it's certainly true of Latin America.
Right. And it is interesting. There's a comment here. Somebody says, they talk about Virginia. We should eat them. Actually, the Virginia Indians saved the English colonists. Well, both Townsend and Nelson Rockefeller owe their lives to indigenous people who saved them from, I think, river. Townsend was almost washed away in a river. And then Nelson, he was on a boating trip up either the Amazon or somewhere in Venezuela, and he got saved, right?
That's the irony. That's the irony for sure, William. Yeah. I appreciate you reading the book. You know, there are some radio hosts that just read the outlines and so on, but it's very clear to me that you are serious. You are a serious person. I didn't know that you self-published all your books, and for the reasons you did. It takes a lot of work, though.
It does take work. I mean, I actually have had fights with Amazon about publishing. They took down one of my books. I had to fight to get it back, but at least I had my control over it, you know, so.
Power to you.
Thank you. And the CIA, like the acronym for Nelson's CIAA, is so close to CIA. Yeah. It's a little bit unnerving.
Yeah, that's true. You know, he used to be in charge for Eisenhower in 54. He was appointed to head up the Cold War, and he was actually in charge of Cold War strategy and propaganda. So he learned...
Hew?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, he worked through HEW, Health Education and Welfare, mind control experiments. MK Ultra, have you heard of that? I bet
Absolutely.
You have.
I've done a number of shows on that. Yeah.
Well, he was heavily involved in that, and again, you can guess why. It is a matter of control, propaganda. One of the things we saw during World War II is that we have a chart of it in our book. Maybe I can find it for you so you can put it up. Cool. But it shows all the different newspaper outlets that Rockefeller was able to get control of during the war. Let me see. Well, I guess I can't find it right now.
He was involved in all these mind control things from a very inception. I think that 1943 he was involved in something. So they knew at least these times. And he's around when he's part of Eisenhower's secret team. He's at the boss of Dulles. Who are the guys? Dulles, if I can
remember. Oh, yeah, the special group. Dulles,
Hoover, Jr., and Keyes, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was a special group that was set up after the war. It was actually put in the State Department. But what they did is they developed covert action as a way to get their way other than outright military invasion. This was another part of their sophisticated learning through trial and error. Let's use covert action, which doesn't have to get oversight by Congress and can do all sorts of naughty things in the world and not be detected. You know?
Right, and also prevent the president from being involved in anything, right? So it shields the president.
Right.
Congress doesn't know.
We recently got involved in further exploring how Nazis had escaped. Well, everyone knows that from Germany after the war. But some of their top people were integrated. And this isn't just in the missile program. It's in covert action. And they were flown over to the U.S. And next thing you know, they're revealing all sorts of intelligence to the Americans, and the Americans take it up. And the people who are behind this at this period are really elites. You know, like Nelson Rockefeller and Dulles, and there are others, and they all come together to figure out, you know, how they're going to get theirs. Without being so easily detected or controlled or regulated.
Right. I think you mentioned Operation Bloodstone as one. People have heard of Paperclip, but they also had Bloodstone too, which.
Yeah. Yeah. Paperclip is the one that's most known, but we, there was a gentleman named Carl Oglesby who had written this wonderful book called The Yankee and Cowboy War that came out in the, I think it was in the 70s. Well, he passed away, but all of his documents are at the University of Massachusetts. And he had developed a theory that the influence of Nazis on U.S. Intelligence was profound. And he was applying it to... he was thinking that it influenced the CIA, for instance, which it did. But and of course, what followed were some awful wars like the Vietnam War. And so we investigated. But what we told his heirs was that it wasn't so much the Pentagon or the CIA as it was very wealthy men who right after the war got involved in covert action. Anyway, his book has come out. Now I'm forgetting the title, but if you look under Oglesby, O-G-L-E-S-B-Y, you'll see this whole exploration of the role of Nazis in the United States. And it still has not been fully probed. Far more escaped into the United States than has previously been acknowledged.
And I think you mentioned one story in, I think, chapter 18, this guy, Sheffield Edwards, who I think worked with Burl, was interviewing some Nazi paperclip guy who ended up killing himself because he had some secrets about his past. I think you include that. I don't know if you remember that. But it is interesting. A lot of these guys around Nelson went on to very famous kind of things. So Burl goes on to be on the board of the Society for the Investigation of Human Ecology, and then King becomes the head of the CIA, like I think you mentioned that earlier, the whole Western Hemisphere. So
exactly.
very influential.
He was one of the guys that targeted Castro for assassination, for instance. Yeah, a lot of dirty tricks in those days.
Yeah. And you mentioned E. Howard Hunt is in there too. So you've got John J. McCloy. And you know, it's interesting because all these important people were on the Rockefeller Foundation and all of a sudden or associated with the Rockefellers end up on the Warren Commission, right?
Oh, yeah. Right. There's another map in our book. In fact, I think I can give you the page number. It's one of my favorites. This would be on page 338. And it is High Kennedy Appointments from the Rockefeller Network. And what it shows is on the left hand, a column that shows Rockefeller Foreign Policy Networks. And on the right hand is the Kennedy administration. Oh, wait a minute. What you have there, that one that you just showed?
Yeah, I can show anything.
This is the 10 imports. Yeah, that shows. I thought it was the media.
My problem is that my Kindle doesn't show the pages of the book. So
if
you tell me the chapter is what you want me to show, that'll work.
Okay, chapter. I'll show it to you.
Because I can go to the chapter.
22, the Brotherhood. Anyway, this is all about the Kennedy administration. And the map, as I shows all these Rockefeller people that are part of the foreign policy establishment. And then you track it into the Kennedy administration. And you see all sorts, Defense Department, Treasury, President, State Department, National Security staff. They're all Rockefeller people. So, and my story on that, which I think your listeners will find interesting, I once showed it to one of the people that worked on Oliver Stone's film on JFK. He was one of the researchers. So I was showing him this chapter, this map, and his face blanched. And then he said to me, "Oh my God, these are people that are involved in the cover-up of the JFK assassination." And I will say that we have a whole chapter on Kennedy and on that.
And that was Camelot versus
Ocasio-Cortez. Exactly.
Right.
Kennedy was terrified of the Rockefellers.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
For a good reason. And we show how one of the things that he did is he blunted Nelson's shining dream in the 60s. He wanted to develop a whole part of the Amazon. And Kennedy tried to prevent that from being as extensive as it was, developing a whole part of the interior. The other thing that Kennedy did is he was in favor of giving government-to-government loans to Latin America, circumventing the big banks, including David's Chase Manhattan Bank. And so they didn't like that one little bit. And when we got into the Rockefeller archives, and we got into papers, Rockefeller papers, leading up to that terrible time, November 1963, when he was assassinated. And all of a sudden, there's no documents. And this goes on. Yeah, a lot of stuff has been removed or sanitized. And I don't go around broadcasting it, but some people feel that our analysis of the Kennedy assassination is one of the best going. I mean, because Kennedy was getting really deeply involved in Latin America. They did not like that.
Yeah, and he was doing all these end-arounds between the old power structures. He was using friends to do communications. So Kennedy was frustrating these old entrenched people.
Yeah, that's right.
And all of them were around Nelson Rockefeller and stuff like that. I mean, it's really incredible. Yep. Nelson Rockefeller's life was people always talk about David because he seems to be more – obviously, Nelson passed away. But David, I think, was alive till 100. But they always – you mentioned his memoirs in the intro to the book. So David seems to be the more predominant one, but Nelson was definitely a power broker, no question.
Absolutely. He worked in subterranean ways. Also, look at that. So I'll have to take a note on that. William Godet. Well, anyway, here's another interesting story, and that is the World Trade Center. Jerry and I were invited to talk about our book in a Vermont bookstore. And the date happened to follow 9/11. It was like September 14th. And we asked the organizers of the event, should we do this? I mean, after this horrible thing. And what we were told, oh, absolutely, come in. Why? People wanted to know. Of course they wanted to know. And those twin towers were named by savvy New Yorkers as David and Nelson, because they were the creation of David through his bank and Lower Manhattan Development Association, and Nelson as governor of New York. They created them. They were like, you know, testaments to their power. Right. And when they came down, some people would comment that the World Trade Center was a symbol of American power. Seldom said it was a symbol of Rockefeller power.
Right. Good point. They almost never mentioned that.
No.
They never mentioned that. And those are very unusual buildings. They stand out against the New York skyline. Like they weren't intended to look like a part of that skyline. They were really...
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes the very powerful can't help themselves. And they have to reveal themselves. You know, it reminds me, I used to be in Italy. I studied in Italy for a while. And there, San Gimignano is this wonderful little town that has all these towers. And it was a way to show the power of the different families. I mean, really.
Right. Anyway, San Gimignano. I just want to show this one picture. This is like one of my favorite conspiracy pictures. It's David Rockefeller talking about New York banking, and his watch is 9/11.
Oh, my God. That's so
That's kind of a famous, people bandy that around. But you can see him. There's Lower Manhattan Association.
There he is.
And you can just see these how strange these buildings are.
Yeah, indeed. They just couldn't help themselves. I won't give a sexual connotation. You can guess.
Well, yeah, but here's the other thing: here's your book you mentioned earlier, Carl Oglesby, "The Astonishing Link Between the JFK Assassination and the Deposing of Nixon." Right? That's the book you mentioned.
No, that is not the book I
mentioned.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. No, which one was it?
Another one. I wish I had it.
I thought you said it was the Yankee and Cowboy. It's another one by Oglesby.
No, he came out with a new one, and it was about the Nazis. Now is it up there? I don't think it is. I think it came.
I'll have to look for it. Here it is.
Where?
Is it Clandestine American Selected Writings on Conspiracies from the Nazi Surrender to Dallas Watergate and Beyond? I don't know.
Well, that might be it. Clandestine America. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's worth reading. Definitely. We were just trying to tell them it wasn't necessarily the governments. It was wealthy people that were doing this, but that's okay. I'm glad he brought it out. There's a lot to be there. And quite frankly, it gets me wondering about all these Nazi families that settled in America. Well, who were some of their offspring, and are they active now? You know, that would be a great project for people.
They're around. I can tell you a story that Bormann's granddaughter is in the U.S. Bormann's was the kind
Right.
They all, a lot of them had to leave Germany. So they had to leave because the Germans were pissed. So they didn't have a choice. So they came to the German places in Texas, actually. And there's some in Brazil, Argentina. There's small places in Chile. So there's some of their offspring around. You'd be surprised.
They were responsible for killing Che Guevara in Bolivia, who was a revolutionary. Che Guevara is admired throughout Latin America. You still see his picture. He was considered a martyr. He wanted to stop this horrendous invasions of Latin America, and he was killed for it by the CIA. We talk about that in the book.
Right. Wasn't that Chi-Chi Rodriguez or somebody?
He was the agent, yes.
Yeah,
but there was a collaboration with a Nazi.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
So I can't remember his name, but.
But
anyway.
I think Rodriguez still wore Che Guevara's watch, so he took his watch. Have you heard that, man?
Yeah.
So, you're so much. I mean, we just kind of bounced around a lot of different stuff, but there's a whole, your book is really just chock full of facts and things like that. There,
well,
suppressed, overlooked, ignored.
Yeah, I so appreciate your spending the time on this, because Jerry just arrived. Too late. Because a huge amount of effort went into it. As I told you, it took us 18 years, and it pains us deeply that more people don't know about the book. So you can listen.
All pre-internet too. Like, you didn't have the internet. You had to go out and look at core documents.
Absolutely. The internet makes research a lot easier.
Yes, way easier.
Yeah. But since you've only gotten halfway through, maybe we can do another segment.
I'd love to.
Yeah, that would be great.
Let's set it up for next month, and we'll cover everything post kind of Eisenhower era.
Yeah, we could even
Kennedy.
Kennedy and Ronald Reagan. He was big. He was very much responsible for horrendous deaths, genocide in Guatemala, for instance. And
And there's so much in Nelson. One of the interesting, like, parapolitical facts about Nelson Rockefeller that I always remember is Squeaky Fromm taking a shot at him, or taking a shot at Gerald Ford, and missing him by like an inch, and that would have been Nelson Rockefeller to be president. Is that the true story?
Oh my God.
I don't know. Yeah. That is a true story, right?
I had not heard that.
Okay. I heard Squeaky Fromm shot at Gerald Ford when Nelson Rockefeller was vice president.
Well, Nelson definitely wanted to be president. He really wanted it. And that explains a lot about what was going on during that time. We talk about that too. So we can get into that. It was his great dream, but he was suspected, you know.
Really? I didn't know that. I don't know the full story.
He was suspected because he had so much money. So there was concern that he couldn't be manipulated, which I would consider to be a legitimate concern. Anyway, this is another factor that, the Republican that was up against JFK was Nelson.
Nelson, right.
Yeah. So have fun reading about that.
Yeah. Well, we'll cover that in part two. And where's the best place for people to get this book?
Well, they've just got to go online. Go to Amazon. You'll read all the great reviews and learn more from all the reviews and people's comments.
And you have an audio book too, right? So people can
There is an audio book. And as I say, if you look for the hardcover, some of them are collector's items and they're very expensive. But sometimes you can find them in like Abe Books or some used bookstores. You can find them. And so. Cool.
Well, I'm looking forward to part two. So the guests listening now, look forward to sometime in July, we'll come back and revisit the second part of the book.
That'd be great.
We have Charlotte Dennett, and Jared Colby shows up at the last minute.
Yeah,
so maybe he'll be
there. You missed it.
And the book does have great reviews. I think you have all 5-star reviews on Amazon.
Yeah, thank you.
Title of the book again is I Will Be Done, The Conquest of the Amazon, Nelson Rockefeller, and Evangelism in the Age of Oil. And thanks so much, Charlotte Dennett.
Oh, thank you, William. I really enjoyed it.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Likewise. Stay there.